up and you see how many you really are like that. And then you go to sleep. So at the end of the day, think about it. Some people write it. They keep a journal, you know? Not for the sake of keeping a black book on themselves, but for the sake of learning from their own behavior, self-observation, which patterns they need to work on and which patterns they are good at. Okay? Let's move on into the 11th step now, which is prayer and meditation business. Okay? Have I ever talked to y'all about this, Patty, some? Have y'all heard me talk about prayer and meditation, all of you? Because you probably don't want to if you've heard it, but we'll go at it a little bit. Prayer and meditation, being as they are spiritual practices, have also tended to fall into the province of religion, have tended to become formalized, to be looked upon as otherworldly kinds of activities, you know, not common and natural and normal and this kind of thing. They're far out. When you say to someone, "I had migraine headaches for years," oh, he says, "How did you get rid of them?" And you say, "I began the practice of meditation." What would his reaction be? You know? Now, if you told him I took some Percodan, he'd understand that, you know, very clearly, right? But meditation? Don't know about that. But there's power there. God, there's power there. We have a friend in the program. I do not know how many years sober now. I mentioned him last night, Tom Powers. And Tom was vice president of the American Atheist Society. He was, literally, in his drinking days. And back in the 30s, Tom was making $250,000 a year when it was big money. Big money. Advertising man. Slick, right? So every time he'd lose a job, he'd fall upstairs, get a better one. And Tom refers to himself as an asylum commuter. Because every time he'd go on a bender, he'd end up in a straitjacket. Every time. Psychotic. And he said, "They'd take me to this hospital and they'd treat me." And he said, "They didn't put me in with the drunks, they put me in with the jumping jacks." That's what he called. And they treated me, right? They gave me lots of hydrotherapy, you know, things that were current in those days, and kept me in a straitjacket until I behaved a little bit. And he said, then they gave me shock treatments. Now, Tom is a genius, a bona fide genius, no doubt about it. Vice president of the American Atheist Society, big man, makes lots of money. Okay? Shock treatment in those days was not electric. They hadn't learned how to do that yet. It was a drug called metrazole. And they gave you metrazole in near lethal doses until you went unconscious, and then they held you while you convulsed. That was the shock treatment routine. In 8 out of 12 of these, 12, series of 12 of these things, 8 out of 12, he was fully conscious. He did not go out. He convulsed while 5 guys held him down. He kept hearing this voice, did the vice president of the American Atheist Society. And the voice was crying, "God, oh God, please help me." And he realized who it was, Patty. It was him. Wonderful book he wrote, too. First title, First Questions on the Life of the Spirit. You can't find it in a bookstore. You'll have to contact. It's now called Invitation to a Great Experiment. Is Knowing God a Reality? Beautiful book. Quite a book. Any of you want to know about it, I'll give you his address or the bookstore where you can get it. It's out of print. Real genius, this guy. Today, this former vice president of the American Atheist Society, sober 40-some years, you know, runs a place up in the mountains of New York called East Ridge. And it's a place for what he calls hopeless idiots. People like him, who are so smart, or so fried in the brain they can't make an AA and NA. Or those who know all the answers and can't stay clean. And they go to Eastridge and they live. And they learn. And they stay straight. And this former vice president of the American Atheist Society now says, prayer is an instinct. Now think about that for a minute. That it's built into us just as deeply as the cells in our body. That we need to pray. That prayer is a natural process. And again, if you have a hard time accepting this, think about that life-threatening situation that you had. There's an automatic cry, and it's always for God. The soul knows where to turn in times of trouble. I don't know why, I just know that it does. We need to pray, apparently. It is not otherworldly. It is natural. More than that, it is food. It is food for our spirit, just as the food we ate today at lunch for Quincy's, I think, was our bodies, wasn't it? It was for our bodies, maybe for our spirit, especially the pineapple cake and banana pudding. We need it. It's automatic. It's instinctive. It's good. For me, it was for emergencies. Every time it was the bottom of the ninth and the count was 3-2 and there were two outs, I looked to the bench and there sat the greatest pinch hitter on the face of the earth. I'd say, hey, I love you, really need you now. He'd come in, get up the plate, switch hit. Which way you want me to hit? Hit left-handed this time. Home run, every time. And I'd say, thank you. You know, I'm going to make you a part of my regular lineup from now on. You're really hitting the ball good. And I'd send him back to the bench where he sat until the next time it was bottom of the ninth, count 3-2 and two outs. Any of y'all do that? Now, that's good prayer. The emergency kind of prayer, the automatic kind of prayer, proves that prayer is a natural thing, that prayer is, as the poet said, the soul's sincere desire. It is what the soul wants to do. But it is not the kind of prayer and meditation that we're talking about in this process of regeneration, rebirth and regeneration, growing down. What we're talking about here is discipline, prayer. Any golfers in here? Who's the best golfer in the world right now, your opinion? Golfer in the world. The guy raised his hand. Who is it? Anybody? Spit out golfers here. Nicholas? Palmer? Who else? Watson? Longer is not bad, you know, and Craig Norman and these other. You know where? Let's take Arnold Palmer, okay? In his heyday. You know where he spent a lot of time? On a practice tee. I've watched great pianists and violinists and things. They spend a lot of time practicing. Yeah, you take Palmer, and he's out there on the tee, you know, early in the morning he's out on the tee. And he's got buckets full of balls. Maybe he's the finest golfer in the world. And he'll take one club, buddy, 7-iron, right, for a while, and he'll hit buckets of balls. And then he'll move up maybe to the, you know, to the 5-iron, and he hit buckets of balls. And then he'll pick up his driver, hit buckets. Hours and hours and hours of practice, goes out on the golf course, big tournament, gets out on the fairway, pulls out a 4-wood, and duck hooks it. Huh? Or he's within, you know, 95 yards of the hole, and he gets out a pitching wedge and scalps it. You ever seen Palmer pick up his bag and throw him away and say, to hell with this, I ain't ever playing golf again? Why? Because golf's important to him. Excellence is important to him. When he hits a bad shot, watch him. Any good golfer will stand right in his tracks and redo that swing. You ever notice that? And that afternoon, guess where you'll find him? He'll have that club, that four wood, and he'll be on that practice tee. And he'll work through the clubs again. You see, my point is, you want to be good at something? You want to be a good player? Get on the practice tee. Get on the practice tee early in the morning. Hit some buckets of balls. Because if you're like me, the way I've been with prayers, the first time I duck hooked one or banana slice one, I said, "The heck with this, I'm not praying anymore." Then the next emergency came, and I prayed a little more, right? And then I'd start out in a spurt, and I'd pray and meditate for a while, and then I'd back off again, and a spurt again, and a spurt, you know. Discipline. You just do it. And you just keep on doing it. And sometimes you don't know why. My sponsor. Well, another first thing he told me was, ask God for help every morning and thank him every night. I didn't know why I was to do that, except that he had told me to do it, so I did it. And after about 3.5 months, I realized I hadn't wanted a drink in 3.5 months. And then I realized why I was doing it. Many times it happens that way. And I prayed very selfishly, and I still do at times. And that's okay. Any of y'all make out shopping lists for God? Seriously, do you make out shopping lists for God? Good prayers call that outlining, you know. You sit down there and you figure out what it is you need and when you need it, and you're very precise. You know, Lord, I need this by Thursday at 3:15 and this by 2, that kind of thing. Who are you praying to? A clerk in the Universal Supermarket? Sometimes it's actually as if I believe God, you know, is a superhuman vending machine, y'all, full of M&Ms. I don't even get upset with me about that. I just do that. I make shopping lists for God, you know. I hope he's got a sense of humor, and I think he has, because he hid himself in the last place he knew I'd ever look. I mean, he's got a good sense of humor. I mean that, okay? So making out those shopping lists really doesn't, work out too good anyway. Sometimes I've prayed for things and I've got them. Have y'all ever done that? And then I don't know what the hell to do with them. You ever done it? Y'all know the classic story about that, about praying for something. Be careful what you pray for because you might get it. The story of the man with the golden screw. Y'all ever heard that one? You haven't? Good. The guy had was born with a golden screw in his navel. And when he was a kid, he couldn't sunbathe, you know, he couldn't take his shirt off, he had to hide that golden screw, you know. And he was tired of it. Carried it all his life, prayed all his life, please take this golden screw away from me, and nothing happens. You know, he got ready to get married. And he says, what's my wife going to think? When I take my clothes off, she sees this golden screw. Nobody else in the world got a golden screw in their navel but me. I don't like it. So he started praying. He's praying and praying about this golden screw, and this big voice says to him, shut up, I'm tired of hearing about that golden screw. I want you to go ahead and lay down on the bed, close your eyes, count to 10 very quietly. Open your eyes, and this cloud's going to come floating across your bed, and on that cloud's going to be a golden screwdriver, and I want you to take that golden screw and take that golden screwdriver and take the screw out of your belly button. I want you to put them both up on that cloud, and it's going to go away, and I don't ever want to hear anything else about that golden screw. The man was just overjoyed, man. Ran into the bedroom, couldn't wait. Got real quiet, closed his eyes, counted to 10, opened them up. Here's the cloud. Golden screwdriver, he reaches up and gets it, takes out that golden screw, breathes a great sigh of relief, lays the screwdriver and the screw on the cloud, it goes away. Be careful what you pray for. The 11th step is very specific, is it not? Very. There are lots of kinds of prayer. This one is very specific. It says we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. That is the purpose of the 11th step. And as to what we pray for, only the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. would do it every day. Because in that chapter it says, huge understatement, we alcoholics, it says, are undisciplined people. That's a huge understatement, isn't it? So we let God discipline us, it says. In a simple way we've just outlined, watching and praying. Be regular. Pick a time each day for an appointment with the higher power. Be serious about it. Be sincere about it. Have fun at it. Look forward to your visit. Feel free. Feel friendly. Feel loved. And pray. Because you need to. It's built into you just as deep as yourselves. I believe that. You need to do it. And we jump over to the flip side, you know, it's meditation business. Well, you talk about getting bent out of shape. Now, when I got into meditation, I was a sight. I look back on me, I don't know how I stayed, you know, sober, sane, much less sober when I was doing that. Definition of meditation, as I understand it today, is not thinking. But I didn't understand it that way when I first, I didn't understand it at all. I really thought, and I tell this, people think I'm lying, I really thought that the great meditators, right, were guys who shaved their heads. You had to be a good one. You had to do this. Shave your head. Get a saffron robe and wear it, right? Sit down on the floor with your legs crossed all funny, you know, and chant Om. Now, that's what I figured you had to do if you was going to meditate. And some people do it that way, and I honor that, but I didn't know what in the world I was doing. I can get into the lotus position. I cannot get out of it. Any all other problems? You know, I drove a lot drunk, and my legs have been busted all to pieces. I can't get out of it. I get all locked in. It hurts me, too. It's uncomfortable, but I figure that's the way to do it. Couldn't find a saffron robe, too damn vain to shave my head, right? But it would do to get all locked up in the lotus position and chant Om. And you know what happened? Nothing. Nothing. It's embarrassing. I figure, hell, I'll be laying on a bed of nails and a six by running over me in 10 days here, you know? If I'm going to meditate, I'm going for the top right away. Lock me up in a, you know, an airtight compartment for a couple of days. I'll show you how to slow down my breath. Hell, I'd have died to what I'd have done. I mean, we're alcoholics and impatient. I am anyway. I'm going for the top. I'm going to meditate with the best of them. Move over, Guru Nanak. Here comes Tom. See, I was still insane. I hadn't had a drink for quite a while. I was still nuts. I just didn't know it. So I sat and I chanted. And nothing happened. And I got pissed. I did. He just wasn't coming, you know? And I called a friend of mine down in Texas. He's meditating and he's showing up in his life. The guy was doing good. He's a dentist, you know. Good guy. Brilliant. I said, I'm trying to get into meditation, Harry. So I said, you got any books I can read? He said, yeah. He said, now I'm going to tell you what books to get. And he said, I'm going to star them. One star is very simple and five stars is very complex. So I made my list. Went to the bookstore. Guess which one I read first? Have any of you ever read The Cloud of Unknowing? Anybody? Don't. It was written in Middle English, right? Thee, thous, all those things. And it was written by a man who had spent his whole life in a monastery on top of a mountain meditating. And I'm going to do his number in 2 weeks. Whew. I called Harris a couple of weeks. I said, this ain't working. He said, well, what book did you read? And I said, The Cloud of Unknowing. He said, I thought so, dummy. Don't read anymore. And he said, how long you meditate? And I said, an hour or two every morning. He said, I've been doing it 9 years. Longest I ever go is 15 minutes. I take Saturday and Sunday off. See, I'm an alcoholic. I also don't know the word moderation, right? Moderation is not in my vocabulary. You know, it's full tilt all the time. All or nothing, right? Discipline and moderation, those two words are not there. And that's what the 10th and 11th and 12th steps are all about. Discipline and moderation. I know what it was. I thought arm was a magic word. You know, you're supposed to see all kinds of visions. They talk about a third eye. I kept looking for that sucker and couldn't find it. One of them sits on the bridge of my nose, another one sits up on my forehead. I couldn't figure out where it was. Then I got talking to this other guy in AA. He said, the secret to it all is your sphincter muscles. Yeah. You know, if you're going to meditate right, you've got to learn to move those sphincter muscles right. This guy was far out. I mean, really. Yeah, I sit down and tried my damn sphincter muscles, too. Took me a long time to get into the big book about it, you know. Things like prayer and meditation, hell, you don't go to the big book. I talk to people about prayer and meditation, so where can I find a good book? Big book. And their countenance falls like shit. It's a good book. It's when we awake, upon awakening, we think about the day ahead. We relax and take it easy. We ask for an intuitive thought or a decision. It's good stuff. It's good, lean stuff. I recommend it to beginners. I recommend it to guys who have a tendency like me to fly out on one limb on meditation and fly out on another limb, and it's like coming home to get back to page 86. Upon awakening. You ever daydream? You ever just sit and stare off into space? Somebody comes up and says, hey, where are you? You say, huh? I didn't know. Were you thinking? Were you? You were meditating. It is natural. It is necessary. It is not otherworldly and far out. See? I mentioned last night the guy down in Texas that taught me so much. He used to call me Sugar. Named Bob White. I went on a 12-step call with Bob White one day down in Whitney, Texas. We didn't do that drunk a bit of good. His ears were closed, you know. But we both stayed sober. On the way down the street, and Bob was always, you know, just talking and grinning. The happiest man I ever saw. And he pulls his truck beside the road. And he turns to me and gives me that grin. He said, Sugar, he says, you see that little cloud up there next to that big one? And I said, yeah. He said, you think I can make that cloud go away? And I looked up to this man. And I told him so. I said, Bob, I have a lot of respect for you. But you can't make a cloud go away. And he said, you watch it. And he grinned. He sat there and looked at that cloud. 2 or 3 minutes, that cloud was gone. I mean it. Scared the hell out of me. It scared the hell out of me. I got, you know, edging toward the door. I was getting ready to get out. And he turns at me and grins. You know? Sweetest man, too. I thought, God, I miss him. And he said, Sugar, you think you can do that? I said, no, Bob, I ain't been sober long enough to make no cloud about it. Some idiotic statement like that, you know, and he grinned at it. He says, yeah, you can. So pick your small cloud close to a big one and focus all your attention on it and will it away. I did. By God, that cloud went away. I taught my children how to do it. We was laying in the front yard vaporizing clouds. It's the truth. Every kid in the neighborhood come over and said, what y'all doing? I said, we vaporizing clouds. I said, what's that? Whole damn yard's full of kids and me. Said, Bob taught me that. Hey, that's a wonderful thing. I dare you to think and vaporize a cloud at the same time. Meditation's purpose is to disarm the ego, put the intellect in neutral. It's idling, but it's not thinking. And all forms of meditation do this, it seems, by focusing not on the ego or the intellect, but on something else. Focusing all of your attention on one thing, on the sound. Focusing all your attention on one thing, your breath going in and out your nostrils. That's what the Buddha was doing when he was enlightened. Focusing on one thing, like breathing in Lord Jesus Christ and breathing out, have mercy on me, as the Christian meditators did. And when your mind wanders away, as it will, that's just a signal to bring it back and watch your breathing or chant or say your mantra. You see, Bob White taught me this too. Said, Sugar, used to when I'd sit down to pray, he said, the first thing that would come in my mind was a chorus line of naked women. And you all have that problem. I mean, you sit down to do something holy, you know, and something, you know, pretty but not exactly holy comes into your mind and thoughts follow. And you all get lustful as hell. He said, you know, I just try to run them out. I said, get off there. Get off there. Get out of here. I'm praying. I'm talking to God. You got no business dancing naked across the stage of my mind. And he said, the more I fought them, the more of them there was. Until there's so many women on the stage of my mind, I just gave up this idea of praying, went all about my business. Made me angry. He said, you want to know what to do now? I always wanted to know what he had to say. He said, I let them dance on across the stage of my mind, and when they're gone, I pray. Spiritual teacher said it. Don't fight the evil thing. Resist not. Turn the other cheek. In AA, we say, let go and let God. Live and let live. Same thing. You take your attention off those ladies, you know. They do their number and they're gone. But if you fight, they beat you. Lisa and I used to walk along the beach, pick up pieces of ocean glass. Do y'all ever do that? I mean, glass has been worked on by the ocean. God, it's so, it's cloudy looking, you know. And green glass is pretty common, and red glass is pretty common. Every now and again, you find a piece of white ocean glass, right? And she found a black one time. And these are treasures. And we walked down the beach, you know, looking for ocean glass. Can't think when you're looking for ocean glass. You're watching the sand too hard, you know. And we'd find a piece, pick it up, rub on it, say, thank you, God, put it in our pocket, and keep on going. First thing you know, we'd walked a pretty good distance and hadn't thought. The Buddhist had a name for the ego. You know what they called it? The drunken monkey. The drunken monkey, the intellect. Always falling around up here, never still, always chattering, ceaselessly chattering. You give your attention to the monkey will keep it. You take your attention from the monkey and focus on something else, you disarm the monkey. He shuts up, or you don't hear him. So we do this because the step says we sought through prayer and meditation. Now, what do you do when you're sitting there watching your breath go in and out your nose, funny boy? Sometimes you feel so good you can't hardly stand it. Because meditation releases endorphins. Sometimes there's nothing, it's flat. But later on in the day, you find yourself in a situation that you used to couldn't handle, and all of a sudden you handle it. You say to God, you know, I don't know how to handle this particular situation, but you do, and I'm going to listen while you tell me, if you will. And he tells you. What our book says is beautiful. What the A book says about it. What used to be the occasional hunch or the inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. We learn to depend on inspiration. What else happens? I sit down with people sometimes, and some of them are troubled people. And I hear me saying something to them which is so profound. Lord, it just, you know. And right away the ego jumps in and says, remember that, Tom. That's heavy. And I can't. You ever have that experience? It's said, it's done, it's like the channel's open, it's been done now. That's it. You can't hold it. It's not yours. Can't remember it. If you don't get anything else out of meditation, except this. You sit down for 10 minutes in the morning, you pray and meditate, you focus on one thing, you know, get quiet, go down within yourself. It carries over into the day, y'all. More and more you find yourself able to focus on one thing at a time. How many of you have problems with that? What upsets me often is I'm trying to do everything at once. If I can discipline myself for 10 minutes in the morning, it carries over into the day. Yes, it does. And I'm able to work on one thing at a time, and I don't get so emotionally out of balance. Bill wrote that in the 12 and 12. If that's all I get out of it, that's enough. Bill says one of the first fruits of prayer and meditation is emotional balance. I believe that. But that's not all. You just know things. Never got any words, you know. But I've gotten images and symbols and pictures and people's faces, and that's something when you get a person's face. And I always call them when I'm done meditating, and they always were either thinking about me, getting ready to call me, or needed to hear from me. How do you know these things? I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that, but God is. And so gradually, by the numbers, you know, through surrender and acceptance and inventory and confession and these other things, we chop away at that big I until it becomes a little I, an anonymous I, an equal I, an I that's able to relate on a, you know, on a level with someone, an I that loves itself because it no longer has to compare itself to other eyes. An I that is related to the higher power in a very healthy and wholesome way. The whole thing's a circle. The whole thing's a return. You grow out, you know, and then you grow back down. And the coming home part's fun. Some of us, it takes effort. Now, maybe I should say all of us. It takes a lot of effort. Okay? These steps have a lot to do with it. Have everything to do with it in my way of thinking. I think I'm out. Is there any questions or anything? Okay. Hope this has made some sense to you. Hope you understand what I mean by growing down. I have always believed, I knew when I heard my son say that it was true. I just didn't know why. And I've been trying to learn why, I guess, ever since. I agree with Eckhart that the soul does not grow by addition, but by subtraction. And I hope you understand what he's talking about. And he's got, there's a nice little book called The Meditations of Meister Eckhart. He's quite a fellow. Says some simple, good stuff. I'm going through it for the second or third time now. Still don't understand it all, but it feels good. You know what I mean? Get into these maintenance steps after you finish those first nine steps. Keep yourself growing, but remember which direction you're growing in. Okay? Remember the direction is back towards the Father, back towards home. You want to fulfill your deepest desire. That is the direction I believe that you must go. And that's what this program is all about. Any questions? I wanted to say, too, if there are any of you that want those tapes and you do just don't have the money, maybe you're newly sober or something like that, just see Lisa or me or Jerry. That's no big deal. Okay? Anything like that. Any other questions or questions at all? Okay. I've either put you to sleep or we've had a good day. And I feel pretty good. Even my stomach.